An admirable illustration of this passion with which a monk, however spiritual and excellent, is sure to be hampered, is found in the simile of the eagle. For this bird, when it is in flight on high, it has soared above the highest clouds, and has withdrawn itself from the eyes of all mortals and from the face of the whole earth. It is yet compelled by the needs of the belly to drop down and descend to the earth and feed upon carrion and dead bodies. And this clearly shows that the spirit of gluttony cannot be altogether extirpated like all other faults, nor be entirely destroyed like them, but that we can only hold down and check by the power of the mind all incentives to it and all superfluous appetites. Chapter 21 Of the Lasting Character of Gluttony as Described to Some Philosophers. For the nature of this fault was admirably expressed under cover of the following puzzle by one of the elders in a discussion with some philosophers, who thought that they might chafe him like a country bumpkin because of his Christian simplicity. "My father," said he, "left me in the clutches of a great many creditors. All the others I have paid in full, and have freed myself from all their pressing claims, but one I cannot satisfy even by a daily payment." And when they could not see the meaning of the puzzle and urgently begged him to explain it, "I was," said he, "in my natural condition, encompassed by a great many faults. But when God inspired me with the longing to be free, I renounced this world and at the same time gave up all my property, which I had inherited from my father. And so I satisfied them all like pressing creditors and freed myself entirely from them. But I was never able altogether to get rid of the incentives of gluttony. For though I reduce the quantity of food which I take to the smallest possible amount, yet I cannot avoid the force of its daily solicitations, but must be perpetually done by it, and be making, as it were, interminable payments by continually satisfying it, and pay never-ending toll at its demand." Then they declared that this man, whom they had till now despised as a booby and a country bumpkin, had thoroughly grasped the first principles of philosophy, i.e., training in ethics, and they marveled that he could, by the light of nature, have learnt that which no schooling in this world could have taught him, while they themselves, with all their efforts and long course of training, had not learnt this. This is enough on gluttony in particular. Now let us return to the discourse in which we had begun to consider the general relation of our faults to each other. Chapter 22 How it was that God foretold to Abraham that Israel would have to drive out 10 nations. When the Lord was speaking with Abraham about the future, a point which he did not ask about, we find that he did not enumerate 7 nations, but 10, whose land he promised to give to his seed, to 74. And this number is plainly made up by adding idolatry and blasphemy, to whose dominion, before the knowledge of God and the grace of baptism, both the irreligious hosts of the Gentiles and blasphemous ones of the Jews were subject, while they dwelt in a spiritual Egypt. But when a man has made his renunciation and come forth from thence, and having by God's grace conquered gluttony, has come into the spiritual wilderness, then he is free from the attacks on these 3, and will only have to wage war against those 7 which Moses enumerates. Chapter 23 How it is useful for us to take possession of their lands. But the fact that we are bidden for our good to take possession of the countries of those most wicked nations may be understood in this way. Each fault has its own special corner in the heart, which it claims for itself in the recesses of the soul, and drives out Israel, i.e., the contemplation of holy and heavenly things, and never ceases to oppose them. For virtues cannot possibly live side by side with faults. For what participation hath righteousness with unrighteousness? Or what fellowship hath light with darkness? 275. But as soon as these faults have been overcome by the people of Israel, i.e., by those virtues which war against them, then at once the place in our heart which the spirit of concupiscence and fornication had occupied will be filled by chastity. That which wrath had held will be claimed by patience. That which had been occupied by a sorrow that worketh death will be taken by a godly sorrow and one full of joy. That which had been wasted by acidity will at once be tilled by courage. That which pride had trodden down will be ennobled by humility. And so when each of these faults has been expelled, their places, that is the tendency towards them, will be filled by the opposite virtues which are aptly termed the children of Israel, that is, of the soul that seeth God, 276. And when these have expelled all passions from the heart, we may believe that they have recovered their own possessions rather than invaded those of others. Chapter 24. How the lands from which the Canaanites were expelled had been assigned to the seed of Shem. For as an ancient tradition tells us, these same lands of the Canaanites into which the children of Israel were brought had been formerly allotted to the children of Shem at the division of the world, and afterward the descendants of Ham, wickedly invading them with force and violence, took possession of them. And in this the righteous judgment of God is shown, as he expelled from the land of others these who had wrongfully taken possession of them, and restored to those others the ancient property of their fathers, which had been assigned to their ancestors at the division of the world. And we can perfectly well see that this figure holds good in our own case. For by nature God's will assigned the possession of our heart, not to vices but to virtues, which, after the fall of Adam, were driven out from their own country by the sins which grew up, i.e., by the Canaanites. And so when, by God's grace, they are by our efforts and labor restored again to it, we may hold that they have not occupied the territory of another, but rather have recovered their own country. Chapter 25. Different passages of Scripture on the meaning of the eight faults. And in reference to these eight faults, we also have the following in the Gospel. But when the unclean spirit is gone out from a man, he walketh through dry places, seeking rest and finding none. Then he saith, I will return to my house from whence I came out. And coming he findeth it empty, swept, and garnished. Then he goeth and taketh seven other spirits worse than himself, and they enter in and dwell there. And the last state of that man is made worse than the first. 278. Lo, just as in the former passages we read of seven nations, besides that of the Egyptians, from which the children of Israel had gone forth, so here too seven unclean spirits are said to return, beside that one which we first hear of as going forth from the man. And of this sevenfold incentive of sins, Solomon gives the following account in Proverbs. If thine enemy speak loud to thee, do not agree to him, because there are seven mischiefs in his heart. 279. I.e., if the spirit of gluttony is overcome and begins to flatter you with having humiliated it, asking in a sort of way that you would relax something of the fervor with which you began, and yield to it something beyond what the due limits of abstinence and measure of strict severity would allow, do not you be overcome by this submission, nor return in fancied security from its assaults, as you seem to have become for a time freed from carnal desires, to your previous state of carelessness or former liking for good things. For through this the spirit whom you have vanquished is saying, I will return to my house from whence I came out, and forthwith the seven spirits of sins which proceed from it will prove to you more injurious than that passion which in the first instance you overcame, and will presently drag you down to worse kinds of sins. Chapter 26. How, when we have got the better of the passion of gluttony, we must take pains to gain all the other virtues. Wherefore, while we are practicing fasting and abstinence, we must be careful, when we have got the better of the passion of gluttony, never to allow our mind to remain empty of the virtues of which we stand in need. But we should the more earnestly fill the innermost recesses of our hearts with them for fear lest the spirit of concupiscence should return and find us empty and void of them, and should not be content to secure an entrance there for himself alone, but should bring in with him into our heart the sevenfold incentive of sins, and make our last state worse than the first. For the soul which boasts that it has renounced this world with the eight faults that hold sway over it, will afterwards be fouler and more unclean, and visited with severer punishments, than it was when formerly it was at home in the world, when it had taken upon itself neither the rules nor the name of monk. For these seven spirits are said to be worse than the first which went forth, for this reason, because the love of good things, i.e., gluttony, would not be in itself harmful, were it not that it opened the door to other passions, viz., to fornication, covetousness, anger, dejection, and pride, which are clearly hurtful in themselves to the soul and domineering over it. And therefore a man will never be able to gain perfect purity if he hopes to secure it by means of abstinence alone, i.e., bodily fasting, unless he knows that he ought to practice it for this reason, that when the flesh is brought low by means of fasting, he may with greater ease enter the lists against other faults, as the flesh has not been habituated to gluttony and surfeiting. Chapter 28. That our battles are not fought with our faults in the same order as that in which they stand in the list. But you must know that our battles are not all fought in the same order, because, as we mentioned, that the attacks are not always made on us in the same way. Each one of us ought also to begin the battle with due regard to the character of the attack, which is especially made on him, so that one man will have to fight his first battle against the fault which stands third on the list, another against that which is fourth or fifth. And in proportion as faults hold sway over us and the character of their attack may demand, so we too ought to regulate the order of our conflict in such a way that the happy result of a victory and triumph succeeding may ensure our attainment of purity of heart and complete perfection. Thus far did Abbot Serapion discourse to us of the nature of the eight principal faults, and so clearly did he expound the different sorts of passions which are latent within us, the origin and connection of which, though we were daily tormented by them, we could never before thoroughly understand and perceive, that we seemed almost to see them spread out before our eyes as in a mirror. Conference 6. Conference of Abbot Theodore, 280, on the death of the saints. Complete contents, other version available, text 49K. Chapter 1. Description of the wilderness and the question about the death of the saints. In the district of Palestine, near the village of Tekoa, which had the honor of producing the prophet Amos, 281, there is a vast desert which stretches far and wide as far as Arabia and the Dead Sea, into which the streams of Jordan enter and are lost. And where are the ashes of Sodom? In this district there lived for a long while monks of the most perfect life and holiness, who were suddenly destroyed by an incursion of Saracen robbers, 282, whose bodies we knew were seized upon with the greatest veneration, 283. Both by the bishops of the neighborhood and by the whole populace of Arabia, and deposited among the relics of the martyrs, so that swarms of people from two towns met, and made terrible war upon each other, and in their struggle actually came to blows for the possession of the holy spoil, while they strove among themselves with pious zeal as to which of them had the better claim to bury them and keep their relics. The one party boasting of their vicinity to the place of their abode, the other of the fact that they were near the place of their birth. But we were upset by this, and being disturbed either on our own account or on account of some of the brethren, who were in no small degree scandalized at it, inquired why men of such illustrious merits and of so great virtues should be thus slain by robbers, and why the Lord permitted such a crime to be committed against his servants, so as to give up into the hands of wicked men those who were the admiration of everybody. And so in our grief we came to the holy Theodore, a man who excelled in practical common sense. For he was living in Salae, 284, a place that lies between Nitria and Sethi, and is 5 miles distant from the monasteries of Nitria, and cut off by 80 intervening miles of desert from the wilderness of Sethi, where we were living. And when we had made our complaint to him about the death of the men mentioned above, and expressed our surprise at the great patience of God, because he suffered men of such worth to be killed in this way, so that those who ought to be able by the weight of their sanctity to deliver others from trials of this kind could not save themselves from the hands of wicked men, and asked why it was that God allowed so great a crime to be committed against his servants. Then the blessed Theodore replied. Chapter 2. Abbot Theodore's answer to the question proposed to him. This question often exercises the minds of those who have not much faith or knowledge, and imagine that the prizes and rewards of the saints, which are not given in this world but laid up for the future, are bestowed in the short space of this mortal life. But we whose hope in Christ is not only in this life, for fear lest, as the Apostle says, we should be, of all men, most miserable. 285. Because as we receive none of the promises in this world, we should, for our unbelief, lose them also in that to come. Ought not wrongly to follow their ideas, lest through ignorance of the true, real explanation, we should hesitate and tremble and fall in temptation. If we find ourselves given up to such men, and should ascribe to God injustice or carelessness about the affairs of mankind, a thing which it is almost a sin to mention, because he does not protect in their temptations men who are living an upright and holy life, nor requite such men with good things and evil men with evil things in this world. And so we should deserve to fall under the condemnation of those whom the prophet Zephaniah rebukes, saying, who say in their hearts, the Lord will not do good, nor will he do evil. 286. Or at least be found among those of whom we are told that they blaspheme God with such complaints as this. Everyone that doeth evil is good in the sight of the Lord, and such please him. For surely, where is the God of judgment? 287. Adding further that blasphemy, which is described in the same way in what follows. He laboreth in vain that serveth God, and what profit is it that we have kept his ordinances, and walk sorrowfully before the Lord? Wherefore now we call the proud happy, for they that work wickedness are enriched, and they have tempted God, and are preserved. 288. Wherefore, that we may avoid this ignorance which is the root and cause of this most deadly error, we ought in the first place to know what is really good and what is bad. And so finally, if we grasp the true spiritual meaning of these words, and not the false popular one, we shall escape being deceived by the errors of unbelievers. Chapter 3. Of the three kinds of things there are in the world, viz., good, bad, and indifferent. Altogether, there are three kinds of things in the world, viz., good, bad, and indifferent. And so we ought to know what is properly good, and what is bad, and what is indifferent, that our faith may be supported by true knowledge and stand firm in all temptations. We must then believe that in things which are merely human there is no real good except virtue of soul alone, which leads us with unfeigned faith to things divine and makes us constantly adhere to that unchanging good. And on the other hand, we ought not to call anything bad except sin alone, which separates us from the good God and unites us to the evil devil. But those things are indifferent which can be apportioned to either side according to the fancy or wish of their owner. As, for instance, riches, power, honor, bodily strength, good health, beauty, life itself,